Yeah, relevant too to what our coming work for the LSU all-time team, because you're going to get, I imagine we'll get into the peak versus longevity argument.
And like, here's a big one, like, since we're working out the piece right now, since Burt Jones was the guy who was on the Golden Century team, so clearly everybody chose peak in this one. And so he was an All-American. He was fourth in the Heisman voting, and he was first among quarterbacks. And his stats to us aren't impressive. That's kind of era adjustment stuff. So just if we just accept his stats are awesome. Then you have Tommy Hansen, who didn't make the team, who I'm at least going to bring up. Mm-hmm. Tommy Hansen is the all-time leader in just about every passing category for LSU. He dominates it. But a lot of that's because he started for 3 years.
Yeah, definitely a lifer.
Yeah, and I don't know. Tommy Hansen was always the guy who was just good enough to lose. Part of that's Mike Archer, not Tommy Hansen. I was a kid. It's hard to overcome your little kid memories.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember watching, and everyone else was going on about Tommy Hansen. I was kind of like, this guy always loses, like, the big game. And so, I don't know. I can't help it. It's an emotional thing. I tag Tommy Hansen for the faults of the Mike Archer era, which is incredibly unfair. But it's just what I do. So, and Burt Jones, I met Burt Jones when I was a kid because he was a Baltimore Colts quarterback. And we knew the chaplain of the Colts, so we got to meet some of the players and stuff. And I mean, there's Johnny Unitas, and Johnny Unitas is God. But next to Johnny Unitas, Burt Jones was, you know, was a pretty high ranking seraphim. So meeting Burt Jones was really, as a 6 year old Colts fan whose parents went to LSU, Burt Jones is pretty much the perfect football player. Yeah. There's no better combination to impress a child of two LSU graduates who was living in Baltimore. I mean, Burt Jones was it. And so, yeah, I'm completely illogical at Burt Jones. Like, he is – I love Burt Jones so much. And like, he was, like, one of the first celebrities I met knowing he was famous.
He's a good one to love.
If that makes any sense. You know, yeah, no, yeah, he is. Like, he didn't do anything stupid late in his life, and that's always good. I mean, it was really good, and I know Football Outsiders ran that piece where they ranked the best seasons of all time, and Burt Jones had 2 in the top 10.
It's funny you said that about Hansen, because I feel like I grew up in a time – I mean, I was coming of age in the 90s, so that's more – everything was bad then. But
yeah.
I can just vividly remember people being like, if we just had Hansen back –
Yeah, no, I think that's kind of Hodson's legacy. It part of his aura is things got so bad after he left.
Yeah,
that I mean, it was just like, oh, if we only had Tommy Hansen again. And you know, and we've talked about this for many times, just how LSU is probably the best college program with the worst quarterbacks.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
I mean, like, Burt Jones was a Heisman finalist. He went to New York, so you know, points there.
Yeah.
Tommy Hansen, I don't think, was a Heisman finalist.
Yeah, I don't think so. Yet.
But, I mean, okay, but and I don't think he was an All-American, but he was at least All-SEC.
Yeah.
Okay, and Jamarcus, for some reason, which passes understanding, wasn't a Heisman finalist, though he should have been.
Yeah.
But other than that, like, we've really not had a whole lot of great quarterbacks compared to other great programs.
Nope. And it was never a defining member of any of our title teams, 58, 03, or 07.
Yeah, no. I mean, people love Matt Flynn, but he was not the best player on that team.
No.
You know, by any stretch of the imagination.
No.
And, I mean, 03, everyone loves Matty Mauch.
Yeah. They were definitely – I mean, I don't know if they were game managers, but they were more in the don't kill you.
They could scramble a bit. I mean, they had that element of they could hurt you with their legs kind of thing. So they were the dreaded dual threat quarterback.
Gosh.
But yeah, like they were just, I don't know. It's just a weird thing about our program. We're just not known for great. Hell, how does Alabama have so many great quarterbacks?
Yeah, that's a great question.
I mean, Alabama's not known for slinging the ball around, but they have Kenny Stabler and Joe Namath, for God's sake.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
great John Parker Wilson.
And the great John Parker Wilson, whose haircut will live on forever.
I miss those Bama days, though.
You know, yeah. I think he's never graduated. They've just cloned him.
Yeah.
They just keep coming up with new John Parker Wilsons just to be the... Actually, it's not. They're not clones of John Parker Wilson. They're all clones of Jay Barker.
All right. Are you gonna play host de facto this week again?
Yeah, I'll do de facto hosting. I'm assuming we're recording now.
Okay.
So we'll get a little. So everyone got a nice little taste of us talking about the greatest LSU players of all time. Just a little smidge that we're working on that.
Yeah, and insight into what's coming.
So. Yeah. So you look, we don't just we these pieces take time to develop. They're crafted out of love.
True.
Once again, welcome to the Sneaky Good Podcast. I am your co-host Poser, always with Dan Davis, otherwise known as Paul Crew.
Hey, I'm here. I said hello this week.
See, good. We're trying to do that. Everything going well this week?
Yeah, it's cold as shit in Chicago, but otherwise, yes. Yeah.
See, that's how we got to live south. South is beautiful.
I know you're a believer in this.
I was living in the north. I did that, and I was one day digging out my car out of my driveway, and I said, I am never living through another winter. With God as my witness, I will never shovel again.
Has that worked out? Have you ever shoveled since that moment?
No. How I look at it is, if I'm in Dallas, if it snows, I just don't go anywhere.
Yeah.
I wait for it to melt.
That works in Dallas. It doesn't work up here.
Yeah, Chicago, you're totally fucked.
Yeah. I struggled yesterday, actually.
Oh, God. It's the worst. I will admit, I miss clear, cold days.
Yeah.
That's really great weather. Like, not when it's windy, but if it's, like, 25 degrees and crisp and yeah. cold. You walk outside and it does kind of... you can feel your cheeks get rosy. And I don't know. I like that level of cold. Because it's not so cold you're miserable.
Yeah, I agree.
But it's precipitation kills you, and wind. Wind is the worst.
Yeah, it's 14 here right now, and windy. Ugh. So it's, none of the clear, crisp. The one upside, the weather this winter, knock on wood, if Puck's tummy fills right, it's going to end kind of soon. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's been sunny here, which is like usually in Chicago, the winter, the worst part is it drags on forever, but it's always like gray for months on end. And you're just like, ugh, it's depressing.
Yeah, I lived in England for a while and I'm familiar with the gray.
Yeah.
Because the sun never comes out. But
I think that's a movie, right? The Gray?
Yeah, it is.
Liam Neeson?
Yeah, Liam Neeson murdering a wolf. It's good times. It's really depressing and you should probably see it. But since you were trapped in your house in 14-degree weather and Chicago being miserable, you had a chance to watch LSU basketball.
I did.
How did that go for you?
Not great. I distracted myself by working while I was watching. So
I was, probably a good call.
Yeah, I was trying to save myself some pain. They're not – I hate to say it. It's hard to imagine having the best player – in the country, or one of the two best players in the country, I guess, Buddy Hield.
Yeah, and it's
being not enjoyable to watch. Like, really not fun to watch team.
I think the real problem is you have Simmons, who's a great player, and you have Blakeney, who's a really, really good player.
Yep.
And then you have Hornsby, who's a good role player.
Yeah, role player.
He does his job. He's a supporting cast guy. That should be enough to at least be watchable. And then it's like you have two players on the court who are, they rotate in and out in Gray and Quarterman, who just kind of taken it as a challenge to see what they can do to hold the team back.
Quarterman's
he had a good game against Oklahoma, so I don't want to totally slam on the guy. He had a terrible night tonight. But if Quarterman doesn't have a bad night, Gray has a bad night.
Yeah, all right.
They sort of take turns of who's – and it's not like Gray had a good game tonight. And also, I mean, in the middle, we're just outmatched.
Yeah, I mean, Victor's our only muscle, really.
And really, what is he? He's like 6'9", listed at 6'9".
Yeah.
And that's kind of generous. He reminds me a lot, for old school fans, reminds me a lot of Lanier Burns. Not very tall, but really kind of a stout player.
Yeah.
I mean, I like his effort. He's another guy. You can win with that guy. Right there, you have the makings of a four-man rotation. You just need a fifth guy who doesn't mess it up. And they have a fifth guy. Like, late in the game, I think LSU was trailing by 5 or 6 points. They're passing around the ball, around the arc, trying to find the opening to pass into Simmons. And Quarterman, of all the people in the court, decides to jack up a three. And I remember the announcer said, well, why not? And I'm like, because he's a terrible shooter.
0-for-5 on the night from threes, by the way.
I mean, just a terrible decision. He's the last guy on the court, other than Victor. But he wasn't going to be taking one.
Yeah.
Also, I think he had fouled out at that point. He was the last guy on the court you want taking a three in that situation. The only way he should take a three is if the ball kind of rotates to him and he's wide open.
Yeah, okay. Absolutely.
But that was not the situation. He had the ball and, I mean, just pass it to someone else. I mean, just keep the ball, keep the rotation going. I don't even think the shot clock was running down. And he committed just so many bad turnovers. Yeah, that one really bad entry pass. He had a lazy cross-court pass to Hornsby that turned into two. It was just a nightmare for him. And honestly, you could see the game kind of getting away. Like, he knew he was having a bad game.
Yeah.
So instead of trying to minimize his role, he tried to break out of the slump.
Yeah, he was pressing, for sure.
And instead of kind of becoming quiet, he tried to loudly break out of the slump. And I don't know, if you're Ben Simmons, you should loudly try. If you're having a bad game, I think you should try and push your way through it because you're Ben Simmons. But if you're Quarterman, perhaps you should just say, hey, it's not my night. And I'm going to play some good D. And it was just a really frustrating game because there was never, even though the game was within two or three late, you never felt like LSU was going to win it.
No. Yeah, that was kind of my, anytime it got an inch closer, it was like, it doesn't matter. Something dumb is about to happen, just to throw it right back out of whack.
And
dumb things too, like the fact that there were far too many points in the game when Dwayne Notice was just completely disregarded. And he was really taking advantage of us. He was 4 of 8 from three, and it's like, how are you going to keep leaving that guy open?
And I mean, I know the theory that South Carolina is not a very good shooting team, so you dare them to beat them with their worst part of their game, but when it's working, you got to change your strategy. And I think that's what gets into the thing I hate most about Johnny Jones, is that he doesn't adjust.
No.
I mean, I think the idea going into the game, hey, we're going to make South Carolina shoot over us, is a good strategy.
Yeah.
On paper, that is the way you play South Carolina. You want them to be taking three-pointers. But once they start sinking those threes, you have to start rethinking the strategy. You have to say, okay, tonight, for some reason, South Carolina is a good shooting team. We need to start picking this up.
Mm-hmm.
And then late in the game, the and ones were just killing us.
Just brutal.
I think it was like 4 or 5 possessions, 5 of 6. And some of those rolls they got to get back, the initial hoop, just friendly roll. And that's how you knew it wasn't LSU's night.
Yeah.
And that's tough to blame the defender on. It was just like, wow. Either they really committed a foul really hard and the ball magically went in the hoop. And you're kind of like, wow, he did everything he could to stop that. Or the ref kind of called a ticky-tack foul, and the player easily put it in. So either way, LSU seemed to be getting screwed. I don't think it was bad officiating.
No.
When they officiated, but it was just kind of one of those, we're not getting the rolls.
Honestly, this is kind of bad, but that bright spot for me was the crowd was kind of fun.
Yeah, I mean, I liked South Carolina was really getting into it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a big home game for them. And that's the thing is, LSU is running out of opportunities to get an impressive win.
Yeah, that was my big thing. And I argued with Chris Abshire about that a little bit. Because, I mean, our best win right now is Kentucky.
It's okay.
It's okay. Exactly, it's okay. And so it's like, who are they going to beat?
But you're also trying to cover up for the fact that LSU's out-of-conference record is terrible.
Awful.
I mean, it's awful. And I know you can justify some of it saying Hornsby wasn't there, so you get a little bit of leeway on how bad it is, but it's bad. And
yeah, how far are you going to run with the, oh, no Hornsby, no Victor for the first month?
Yeah. And I agree they're critical players, but we are talking about the third and fourth best players, not the first and second best players.
Yeah, it's not like no Ben Simmons for the first month. Yeah.
And the other thing is, LSU has played a couple of games now where they had to get a win out of one of them.
Yeah.
They didn't have to win all of them. They didn't have to sweep them. But lose it, the A&M, Oklahoma, South Carolina string, particularly since two of them were on the road, you needed a win there. I think the A&M and South Carolina games were bigger than the Oklahoma game. The Oklahoma game was at home, and I think you just got credit for playing it. Because Oklahoma just is so great in the RPI that even if you lost that game, even though that's the one LSU came closest to winning. But the South Carolina and A&M games, you had to win one of those two.
Mm-hmm.
And also, it helps you in the conference standings because LSU, yes, they're in first place in the SEC, but now they've fallen back into a tie. Part of that's illusory because the schedule's about to get a lot tougher.
Yep. Yeah, you're looking to point to the fact that, oh, this team is improving. So the hope we're clinging to, I guess, is that this is a super young team. It really is.
Yeah.
But super young teams win in college basketball when they're very talented, which, I mean, we can argue about LSU's depth, which isn't great, but they do have some prime time. I mean, they have Simmons and Blakeney.
And I'd like to see Patterson play a little bit more.
Yeah, I thought that was really curious tonight. Like, he played 5 total minutes. And
two of them were after Quarterman fouled out.
Yeah.
And you're kind of like, was he not in a long time ago with the Quarterman was having?
These are the Johnny Jones decisions that are just kind of baffling.
Yeah, it's sort of like he's passively watching the game.
Yes.
Instead of trying to take an active role and, hey, this is what I'm going to do to shake things up. And he kind of lets the game happen to him.
That's a great way of putting it.
And look, I don't like coaches who overcoach and will call their timeout. And sometimes you want to let the players play. But when the game's getting away from you and things are going bad, you do need to at least make a decision. You can't just keep doing the same thing and hope it works out. And for a while, it did all of a sudden just change on itself because Simmons went through a period early in the second half where it looked like he was just going to completely take over the game.
Yeah, I felt like there was that run there, and then we got it to, I don't know if we ever got it even. Maybe we got it even.
No, we did. We tied it up. And,
yeah,
and then
shortly after that, I think it was like 8 minutes left.
Yeah.
It was kind of like, it's not going
to
happen.
That's the Antoine started to happen.
Yeah.
And because what happened is that we started getting a two-man game going. It was Simmons and Blakeney were going back and forth. And then almost if you watched the game, every time Simmons touched the ball, he had 3 South Carolina defenders around him.
Mm-hmm.
And what was great is he recognized that.
Oh, yeah, he was passing out of it.
And that's when Hornsby started hitting the threes. He was passing out of that. And, I mean, this was beyond a box in one. This was a triangle in two. And the triangle was dedicated to one player. I mean, South Carolina had the strategy of, we're not going to let Simmons beat us. And Simmons still almost beat them. That's how good he is. But they dared anyone else on the team to step up. And Blakeney did. So I don't want to say that Blakeney didn't, because Blakeney had a really good game.
Yeah, he did.
And Hornsby, he can't really create his own shot, but when he got open, he hit his looks. So I've got no problem with the game he had either. But, man.
You know, what's interesting, too, is LSU has been a pretty inefficient, ugly offensive team, but they've been a solid defensive team until tonight. And then,
yeah.
And some of that was just South Carolina catching the shooting bug, but
yeah, shooting is one of the it's hard to stop a team when they're shooting like that. I know everyone, the big thing is analytics is about it's about shooting more than not taking layups and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But shooting defense is one of those things. It's just variant. There's really not a whole lot you can do to stop it. I mean, you get in their face and, you know, you get your hands up, you play good defense. But pretty much everyone plays good defense at this level. When a team's shooting it really well, they're just shooting it really well. And there's really not a whole lot you can do other than just wait for them to get out of it. other, I think 3-point, you can keep running a guy at him. But, I mean, they really were leaving guys open on the 3-point line. But really, South Carolina just, they had one of the, they played their best game of the season.
Yeah.
And that stinks for LSU, but there's really no wiggle room for LSU. I know Abshire is saying that it's a really weak bubble, and he's right. And really what's helping LSU out is that of the smaller conference, there doesn't look like to be a whole lot of multi-big leagues. You're not having like the Missouri Valley doesn't have 3 teams that are going to go this year, or the MAC doesn't have 2 teams. The WCC doesn't look that strong. And so you don't have those bid stealers this year. So the SEC might get more teams than normal, but when you get down to it, once the SEC gets past four or five teams, are they going to get 5 or 6? They still might only get 5 teams. And will LSU be one of those 5 teams?
It's hard. Like, I keep trying to envision a scenario when this team finishes out the season pretty well, goes into the SEC tournament. Are they going to be able to string together those wins to win the conference tournament? I just don't see it. I don't see them being that consistent.
I don't either. The thing is, they don't need to win the SEC tournament. If they can just a good win there, if they go and beat A&M, or heck, beat Arkansas, beat someone like that, that would go a long way to helping LSU get. Honestly, it might help LSU to be one of the lower seeds, not get a bye. I don't know how the structure works, but to play the extra game.
Yeah,
for them not to get a. 14 teams, I guess 2 teams get a bye. It might behoove them to be a 3rd or 4th seed because they probably need the extra SEC win.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree.
I mean, I wrote at the very beginning of the season, it's over. This team's not making a tournament. They have played very well in the SEC compared to how they played at a conference. So there is the light. So I take that back. They are not dead. But what has really helped them out is that the rest of the NCAA has played even worse.
Yeah.
And they still have a very weak RPI, but they're in the 50s, maybe the 60s. That's real dangerous to be in. The only positive line on LSU's resume right now is their conference record. So LSU needs to stay near the first place in the SEC. They need to stay near a tie. So when I say they don't want the bye, They need that to because of tiebreakers. They want to have that record match up with everyone else. As long as they're in that pack, I think they could make the tournament. But then, what's the point of going to the tournament to lose in the first round?
Right. It's postponing misery.
And, hey, it's better to make the tournament and lose than to win the NIT.
And it would at least, help us avoid the endless amount of shame that will be poured on the program if we don't make the tournament with Ben Simmons.
No, that would be the worst thing that could ever happen to LSU, because LSU would never get a big-time prospect again if they missed the tournament. So it's really critical for them to make the tournament, and they just need to find a win somewhere. So there's still a couple of chances. I think they have A&M again. They still have to play Arkansas again.
Yep.
They need a win. It's that simple. I think they have now 3 losses in conference. Probably if they're at 5, that's probably where they max out. So very little margin for error right now.
Yeah, and, you know, tonight it's not a terrible loss. South Carolina's a pretty good team. It's on the road. It's just, you know, every loss is sort of critical.
No, I agree. This is not a bad loss, but they need a good win.
Yeah.
So it's good that they're not dropping games to bad teams. That's good. They got through the Auburn game. They got through Mississippi State. Good. South Carolina's a good team. This is not a bad loss. But LSU, their resume, needs another good win because right now there's only one of them. So
they get A&M Saturday, and A&M's kind of hemorrhaging right now too. So
they need in on that. That the game's looking – I know that we keep saying, well, this is the big one. So now until they win a game, they're all big.
Yeah.
I'd feel a lot more comfortable if LSU had a second big win on his resume.
Yeah.
And we're not even talking about, like, you know, beating Kentucky in their prime kind of stuff, because Kentucky's not Kentucky this year. We're talking just a top 25, top 50 win.
Yeah, yeah. Just a quality win.
yeah, we're just talking quality wins, not great wins. So we'll see. We'll keep, you know, we're in the stretch run. You know, February is when things get real.
Yep. I mean, we could just hope the team really does grow up over this last month of the season. It's not been totally unforeseen.
Blakeney looks a lot better.
Yes, he's coming into his own.
So there is some development there. So, and maybe Patterson will get off the bench because I have no idea why he's still sitting there.
Yeah.
But the reason everyone's paying attention to basketball now is because football's now over.
Yeah. Finally and completely. Not just college football.
Not just college football. We got to watch the College Football Retirement League put on the Super Bowl.
I'm using that forever now. I like that.
Oh, I've always called it the College Football Retirement League. It's where I root for teams based on who they have from college.
I used to have a team, but I just moved away from it. I've lost interest in the league mostly. But
and they've done a lot to kill interest.
Yeah.
Goodell is. I don't want to say that he's evil because we've seen sports evil, and that's like FIFA.
Yeah.
Like they actually have a literal death toll.
That's a high bar.
Yeah. And the NFL kind of has a death toll, because what if you want to think of the CTE stuff?
Yeah.
They're just awful. And I know we had talked about this before. You said, like wrestling. You know, wrestling has a death toll. When we're talking about, I don't like my hobbies to kill people.
Yeah.
And wrestling has a lot of famous dead wrestlers. I mean, it's very, and on, you know, with the retirement this week. See, we were even tying into a previous podcast right here. Sam paid attention. With Daniel Bryan retiring.
Yeah.
I was struck before the Super Bowl, they introduced all of the previous Super Bowl MVPs.
Which was really cool, by the way.
I really like that kind of stuff. And, now 49 out of 50 of them are still alive.
That's very interesting.
Which, for a game so violent and going through such problems, you would think they're... Particularly when we compare it to a sport that really does have problems with death, like wrestling. It's amazing how many of them are, and honestly, look to be in pretty good shape.
Yeah. You would suspect the death toll to be higher. Like, you'd think half of those guys would be done.
Yeah. It was just, and honestly, like, a lot of guys looked in,
it wasn't like they were all getting wheeled out there in wheelchairs.
Yeah. And honestly, we're talking 50 years ago. So some of these guys, they're getting up there. And also, like, everybody's looking pretty fit and trim. I think part of it is that so many of them are quarterbacks.
True.
But it was that did strike me. I was kind of like, that's kind of a weird thing about this game. And then, you know, the game happened, and it was fun to watch Cam Newton lose because, you know, Auburn. But I think we've both kind of gotten tired in the immediate aftermath of all the ridiculousness.
Yeah.
And I think it really comes down to, if you don't like the guy, you got more fuel to the fire to not like him.
Yeah.
Easy. And if you like him, you got more fuel to like him, because he's still like, you know, F you, man. I'm, you know. And honestly, while I didn't like, I thought he acted like a sullen teenager after the game, which doesn't win any points with me, because not because of he owes us anything, but because that's a bad look for anybody.
Yeah.
Don't imitate a 15-year-old. It's a bad look. But I liked him the next day when he was kind of defiant. Is this, you know, when he was doing, quoting Lombardi, you know, show me a sore loser and I'll show you, I mean, show me a good loser and I'll show you a loser.
Yeah.
I kind of wish he would have done that in the aftermath of the game. Like I just think it was that he was so thoroughly defeated.
Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah, we talked about it. I mean, I think he's such an emotional guy that he almost can't help himself. And that's not an excuse for his behavior by any means. I'm explaining what I think happened.
I think he expected to go in there, and I think they expected to kick the shit.
Yeah.
I think they were like, we're the better. And I think so many people blew so much stuff up their ass that they thought they were unbeatable. They thought they were the 85 Bears, which we'll get into in a second. And they found out that they weren't playing the New England Patriots of 1985. They were playing a really good team in their own right.
Yeah.
And I think that kind of took them by surprise. I thought they expected a coronation, and instead they had to play a football game. And they never really got on their feet in that game.
No, it was like running in mud constantly.
And as much blame as Cam gets, because, you know, he's the quarterback, and I think that's entirely fair. Quarterbacks get too much credit and they get too much blame. But that's the nature of the position. They get paid. They get paid accordingly for that. Cam was definitely not the problem in that game.
No.
His receivers were terrible. He was getting killed by an offensive line that couldn't block, and his running game was non-existent. So of the 11 guys on offense, he might have had the best game.
Somehow.
And he didn't even complete 50% of his passes. I mean, it was – I mean, they got destroyed by that Denver defense.
They did. And their defense held up their end of the bargain because they destroyed the Denver offense.
Yeah, no, they were great. It was two great defenses. I think it – I forgot who it was on Twitter I was talking with. Before the game, we were talking about it, and we were comparing it to Super Bowl V, saying that it was going to be like Johnny Unitas' last hurrah when he could barely walk. And they still won in a terrible, sloppy, miserable game that, you know, Bubba Smith didn't even wear his championship ring from, and then, which allowed me to hype up Mike Curtis – and say that, well, that makes Von Miller Mike Curtis. And Mike Curtis is one of my all-time favorite football players. You probably know him of when the fan ran onto the field, and if you've ever seen the footage of a Colts game and a guy runs on the field and a player just clotheslines him and knocks the fan unconscious, that's Mike Curtis. He's awesome. And so I felt like Von Miller winning the MVP, I called it on that Mike Curtis thing, so...
You were on it.
Yeah, we were totally on that. It was a deep, ugly defensive game. And I think in a way this really is great for the NFL because the Brady-Manning rivalry is ending.
Yeah.
If Manning plays another year, he's not Manning anymore. Right? No. And Brady's getting near the end as well. So they're looking for that new rivalry. And I think they've kind of stumbled upon it if they play it right with Cam and Russ Wilson. Because they now have both had their crushing defeat.
Mm-hmm.
And last year, Russell Wilson was the one, you know, who did said all the right things and did all the right things when they lost. He was Roger Staubach-esque in the way he handled the media as the golden boy. And Cam was the petulant child. So now you kind of have this contrast. And I know I sent you the number. Russell Wilson had better numbers than Cam this year.
Oh, yeah.
A lot better. And Russell Wilson led the league in a lot of categories, and Cam was nowhere near the top like that. He was lower top 10 in a lot of stuff. And so I think you can really set up this rivalry of the two best quarterbacks in the league, and then you also have contrasting personalities. That Russell Wilson is the underdog that no one believed in, and he's the good guy. You know, he's Luke Skywalker or Rey if we're using the new trilogy. And Cam Newton is, you know, either Darth Vader or Kylo Ren, depending on, you know, your age group. And so I think you kind of they've stumbled into the here's the good guy and here's the bad guy. And I don't think that's true. I don't think that's – people are more complex than that. But from a marketing standpoint, we don't care about complexity. We want a nice storyline to tell everybody. And like I said before, I'm a sucker for the story. So I kind of like – that we're set up for years to come of this, you know, all-American boy and Russell Wilson and the bad guy Cam Newton who, you know, represents them damn kids today.
You even get a nice physical juxtaposition because Russell is, you know, 5'11", and yeah, he's athletically built. And but that's all part of his sort of oeuvre as a player. Like, he's short and was undervalued because of his height, which was... everything that's wrong with the NFL. And then you got Newton, who's like the physical perfection special. He is the specimen, you know.
He's Ivan Drago in Rocky IV. Right. You know, he must break you.
Yeah, I think it was like Bud Elliott tweeted a couple weeks ago because someone said, well, Cam Newton is the new mold for a quarterback. And he was like, the hell of that? Like, there's no one that looks like Cam Newton and runs like him.
And I know it's cocky when Cam Newton was saying, there's no one like me. You know, like I'm this, you know, unique thing where it's like, you know, no one's ever seen anyone like me before. He's right. We never have. And we probably won't again. He is a truly unique player, which is another thing that makes it special. I think this is great. I hope Cam stays this good. And I hope Russell Wilson stays this good because we can have years of – and they're in the same conference, so they'll keep each other out of Super Bowls. And – you know, this could be one of those really outstanding rivalries because they need to play each other.
Yeah. And you know, and like the Manning Brady, to carry out your analogy, they play with a bunch of, I mean, now that Lynch is retired, and but even this year, Lynch was really not a factor for the Seahawks. They are clearly the two best offensive players on their teams and lifting up a bunch of, not bad players, but just more just role player types.
Now, they both have great defenses. But
yes, and they play with strong defensive teams.
But you know what? That's fair. They each have a great defense, so it's not like one has the leg up there.
No.
And they're great in different ways. Like, Carolina has a better front seven, and Seattle has that secondary, which is amazing. So.
I like it. I like the analogy. And it's probably not, if you would have said that like 5 years ago, people were probably thinking this would be like Luck and Griffin.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. Honestly, even 2 years ago, no one would have thought Russell Wilson because Russell Wilson was considered the guy who was just tagging along.
Yep.
And I think he's really grown into a great player. I think 2 years ago, it was more he was more likely to be compared to Joe Flacco.
Yeah, that's fair.
You know, look, Flacco's not a terrible player, but he kind of has his own meme of, is Joe Flacco elite? Which tells you how good he is.
Yeah.
I like to call it the Flacco line. he is the bare minimum of quality you can get from a starting quarterback and win a Super Bowl.
That's pretty good.
Because you need good quarterback play in the modern NFL to win a Super Bowl.
Yeah, absolutely.
But Joe Flacco is the line. Any worse, you're not going to win. Any better, then you can start relying on your quarterback to do anything. But Flacco's about as bad as you can get and still win.
And have a prayer.
And he's actually pretty good. I think he gets a bad rap. The difference is to answer the question, no, he's not elite. I think that's – he can carry the Ravens, but he doesn't hurt them. And he plays pretty well in the playoffs. But aside from the Super Bowl and the run-up to the Super Bowl, ESPN had their series of 30 for 30s again, and this one was Super Bowl themed, and it was about the 1985 Bears. And I know you live in Chicago, but you were too young for the Chicago Bears.
No, this was the year I was born.
But I'm assuming since you live in Chicago, it's still they're still a big deal.
It's the thing, yeah.
And
it's everywhere.
I didn't grow up in Chicago, but the 85 Bears are the football team. They're kind of held up as the example of the best team ever. And what's amazing is they were held up like that before they even won a Super Bowl. Like, they filmed the Super Bowl shuffle before they won.
Yeah.
Which is just great. But that 30 for 30 just, it got me so amped up for that team. I just remember how great that team was.
Yeah, they were impressively dominant. It wasn't just like, oh, this is a good, really good team. Like, they were kicking the shit out of everyone.
Yeah, and honestly, and the NFC was loaded back then.
Yeah, these are good. I mean, there was, you know, the 49ers coming into their own, and Parcells Giants teams, and yeah, there's a lot of good teams.
The Redskins won 3 Super Bowls.
Yeah, shortly right after.
In a 10-year span. I mean, they had just won one recently. An amazing array of talent, and they just bombed them, and still one of the great front sevens of all time. I mean, the kind of talent you'll never see on one team again because the salary cap won't allow it.
Yeah, I was looking over that. Actually, I finished the documentary tonight. I watched like the first half of it last week, and we didn't get back around to finishing, but I knew we were going to talk about it tonight, so we watched it tonight, and I was like kind of Googling and reading about them as they were talking, just to sort of refresh myself, but just all of those guys.
I mean, it's like, let's see if I can even pull it from, I mean, I watched the documentary last week, so they're still kind of fresh in my mind, but you had Dent and Perry up front, and then Hampton and McMichael on the ends. So the worst player in the front four is either the Refrigerator Perry, who is world famous, or Mongo McMichael, who I think ended up with something like 90 career sacks.
95.
That was not a bad guess.
Yeah.
Those are the two worst guys on the line.
Yeah, that's unbelievable.
And then the linebackers are almost as good. Wilbur Marshall was amazing. And he wasn't really featured a whole lot in the documentary, which kind of bothered me because Wilbur Marshall was, he was not as good as Lawrence Taylor because no one was good as Lawrence Taylor, but he, you could mention him in the same breath and not be considered a total moron.
Yeah.
Like, he was considered the best mortal linebacker at, when he was playing, or at least for a very brief period of time, because he faded out pretty quick. But Otis Wilson was really good. And then, of course, Mike Singletary is one of the greatest middle linebackers of all time.
Yeah.
I mean, that front seven is so intimidatingly great that it just boggles my mind that it existed.
And then even, yeah, it's just – Hampton's in the Hall. Dent is in the Hall. McMichael's not, but it's – probably a fringe Hall of Famer.
He's probably not. Like, 100's kind of the line for sacks to get in. Wilbur Marshall is not – he probably doesn't deserve it, but for a brief period, he is one of those shooting stars.
Oh, yeah.
He was great for a very brief period. Singletary is, of course. Just – but what I did like about the second half is they kind of went through the downfall of the team.
Yeah, and that was interesting.
And first off, we've talked about death toll of – MVPs has been very light. But for the Chicago Bears, well, first off, Walter Payton, which isn't really football related, but just tragic.
Terrible. You could tell they were all still kind of shook from it.
Yeah, he was definitely the guy that every...
He was the heart and soul of the team, even though they were a defensive monster.
I think he was the one offensive player they respected.
Yeah, he was the tough guy like them.
Yeah, I think because he had played so long for so many bad teams. And I think they also really like McMahon for different reasons.
Yeah.
But, yeah, he was such a great player. And then they talked a lot about Dave Duerson, who had CTE. And that's when the documentary got creepy.
Yeah.
And, you know, you started having guys talking about, well, I've put in my will, what to do.
Start losing. Wilson talked about that.
And then McMahon and the procedures he goes through.
Which was fascinating.
Totally fascinating. When they had that thing where they show the two scans, and you could actually see the fluid come out.
Yeah, he could say, he's like, I felt like it was draining or something. I can't remember. He was like, it was like a toilet flushing.
Yeah, when he said it was a toilet flushing. Yeah, and you're like, yeah, whatever. That's him just hyping up. You know, people. And then they show the two scans. You're like, oh my God, it was a toilet flushing. But, I mean, just really disturbing. Just what they put themselves through. But what was also interesting is when they asked them, would you do it again? And they all said yes.
Yeah,
without a doubt. Like, they're afraid of what can happen to them. And I think Otis Wilson really put it into terms. He's like, I've told my family what to do. Like, he is not kidding. But he would still do it all over again. Like, this was the deal. Like, you – football's not good for you.
No. But it gave them something.
Yeah, I think there's something to be said, and I think McMichael really touched on that, where he's just like, you don't know what it's like to walk out on a Soldier Field and have 90,000 people scream for you.
Yeah.
And like, you will never be as alive as you are. I will never be as alive as I was in that moment, which is really saying something. And it's kind of sad, but you can see why athletes have such a hard time giving it up.
Well, yeah, that's all. Like, you brought up Daniel Bryan earlier, and highly doubt you watched his retirement speech, but his whole speech was basically, I got to do this thing that I love for 16 years and I'm exceptionally grateful for it. I have to stop now or it's going to kill me. But it brought me all these great things. Like, I met my wife in this and, you know, you guys, all the fans have given me so much joy. And I don't love anything more than I love doing this. So I'm pretty lucky that I get to do it for 16 years. So it is really interesting to see that trade-off.
Yeah, and I think McMichael didn't quite say it, but it was kind of implied. He's like, it's worth shaving some years off your life to live that great, if it makes any sense. But what I find interesting is that the 85 Bears have lived on, and they have a special place in history as this truly great team.
Mm-hmm.
But what's weird is the 49ers won three Super Bowls in four Super Bowls in about 8 or 9 years.
Yeah.
The Redskins right around them won three Super Bowls in 10 years. The Raiders won two Super Bowls in 5 years. And this is not that far removed from the Bears. And then really just 5 years before the 49ers was the last Steelers Super Bowl, where they won 4 in 6 years. So in the midst of all – and then you'd have the Cowboys would come after the 85 Bears where they win 3 and 4. I mean, that's a lot of dynasties in a really short period of time.
And the Giants won 2 in 86 and 90.
You're right. Giants won 2 in 5 years. So in this really compressed time period, you have so many great, great teams. And I guess the 49ers get remembered as the dynasty. They're the ones that get remembered as the dynasty of the 80s. The Redskins have kind of been forgotten.
Yeah, like almost wholly forgotten in a weird way.
But the 85 Bears live on as this singularly great team, yet not only do they only win one Super Bowl, they only went to one.
Yeah, I'm glad they touched on that too. I think it was, I can't remember if it was Dent or Otis Wilson that said they would have won 3 if Buddy Ryan stuck around.
And
they batted around, they like, there's many theories about why this didn't work out. I mean, obviously Ryan leaving didn't help anything, but.
Well, 2 years later when the Redskins won, they had Wilbur Marshall at that point. Mm-hmm. So, okay, I think that's, it was the talent drain. But does Wilbur Marshall leave if Buddy Ryan's still there? Because I think that's what tilted the balance.
Yeah.
And also, McMahon got hurt. I think watching the clip of McMahon get picked up and dunked on his
head
so far after a play was so shocking to watch from what the NFL has become. Because that was illegal in so many ways today.
Yeah. I don't know that guy would ever play another snap if that happened.
Right. And first off, it was incredibly late. No one hits a quarterback that late. Yeah. No. Secondly, no one picks a quarterback back up and throws them on their head like that.
It wasn't even like, I was kind of running.
Like, that kind of hit just doesn't happen to quarterbacks. And then put it together, no one hits a quarterback that hard, that way, that late. That hasn't happened since McMahon got hit like that. That is...
Yeah.
I think the Bears have a case with that. Like, I do think that might have cost them a Super Bowl.
Yeah, they sure seem to feel that McMahon getting hurt was a big part of it.
But it does open the question is Ditka that great of a coach?
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's a pretty fair question. Because I go into it thinking, you know, Ditka's one of the great coaches of the NFL. But you look at it, he had this incredibly stacked roster. He had one of the greatest players of all time in Walter Payton. And at the end of the day, he had one of the greatest defensive coordinators working for him.
And the players, at least the ones interviewed, didn't seem to give much of a shit about him.
They
were there for Buddy Ryan.
They won one and then never came back. And I think that's what really gets me, is that they never, ever, ever went back. Yet at the same time, again, that's also in a way has encouraged the greatness of the 85 Bears. Because with the other teams, you can like with the Redskins, it's the Redskins of the 80s and early 90s.
Yeah.
You can't really pin the 49ers, you can at least say the 80s 49ers. But those Giants teams, those are kind of two different looking Giants teams. No one goes the 86 Giants and the 90 Giants. But you say the 85 Bears. Like, it just, I think the fact that it was limited to 1 year makes it greater.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of validity to that.
But what's funny is, as you know, these legacies live on, like, that era had so many great dynasties, and I think a lot of them have been remembered quite fondly. I think the reason the Redskins haven't been remembered is because they had 3 different starting quarterbacks, and outside of Darryl Green, most of their best players tended to be linemen.
Yeah, I was about to say, they don't have those sort of signature players that you identify great teams with.
I mean, Darryl Green was a great player.
Yeah, but absolutely great player.
It took Art Monk forever to get in the Hall of Fame, which was ridiculous. Art Monk was one of the greatest wide receivers. He held most of the records that Jerry Rice broke.
Mm-hmm.
And it took him like 5 or 6 years to get in the Hall of Fame because I think Peter King didn't like him, which was ridiculous. But so Art Monk took forever to get in the Hall of Fame. Joe Jacoby still not in the Hall of Fame. People are freaking out this year that Terrell Owens didn't get in. Yet one of the best left tackles in the history of pro football is still on the outside looking in. And it's not like Jacoby, this is his first time on the ballot. So I really think the only Hall of Famers they have on a team, I think it's Green and Monk and Russ Grimm. And that's it.
Yeah, it's a pretty thin list.
And they won 3 Super Bowls.
Yeah, maybe Gibbs is... The greatest coach of all time.
Yeah, I think you really come into it. Because honestly, who else would you put in on those teams? Charles Mann, Dave Butts? There's really there's not a whole lot of
like we just talked about that the Bears had this great collection of talent that will likely never be seen again, and the Redskins, not that they had bad players, but they don't have that just singular amassing of like legendary players.
Yeah, because we were talking about borderline guys who probably could be in the Hall, and the Redskins were kind of grasping at straws. Yet the Redskins won 3 Super Bowls. It's just a really weird thing. The other thing, and this is the one that really, I think the team that I compare the 85 Bears the most to.
Hey guys, this is Dan Davis, or Paul Carew, or Paul Dan, or whatever the hell you want to call me. This was the Sneaky Good Podcast, episode 4, part 1. I blame Tommy Hodson. Join us early next week for part 2 when Poser will tell you the team he most compares the 85 Bears to. And we'll continue our discussion about NFL dynasties. But until then, swim on over to iTunes, subscribe, download, give us a rating, retweet us, share us on Facebook, tell your stepsister and your mom, your mother-in-law, especially your uncle. So tell all those people and then get back with us, and we'd love to hear from you and love to keep making more podcasts for you. Talk to you soon. See you on the interwebs.